Hi, everybody. Good evening. It's 8 o'clock, and I'm not entirely sure what day it is, but it must be Monday if I'm here on the radio. This is Jasmine, your host of the Spring of Life show here on BBS Radio, and I'd like to welcome you and welcome my co-host, Benjamin. Hey, Ben.
Hello, everybody. It's me and Jasmine. It's lovely to be on the air with you again. And we get to spend another exciting hour together just talking about, I believe today it is conditioning. And we're going to be talking about how the brain works with conditioning, how conditioning affects us, how our definitions and beliefs essentially are entirely made up of conditioning. And we're not talking about conditioner, that stuff that you can smear into your hair after you had a good shampoo. Rather about conditioning, the type that even someone like Pavlov explored. The fascinating thing where you can ring a bell and make a dog salivate for whatever reason you might want a dog to salivate, but it's one of the effects it has.
And although it's not really about hair products, what I will say is that when we really look into the conditioning and we untangle it, it really does assist in untangling our worlds and clearing the lenses through which we see things. Because I've noticed most recently that there's some interesting dynamics that play out in with humanity and within our own worlds and our own heads as we flog ourselves, and also the way in which we view others. And I've been sitting with this as I've had some interesting situations unfold in my life. I always do. And because I pay attention to them. I find them fascinating that they can guide me to a deeper sense of inner clarity and wisdom for myself. Now, that it's not always comfortable, especially when the tangles get quite messy and big. You know, I don't know if you've ever been on a motorcycle, but I have long hair, and when I put that helmet on, I've had it when I've taken it off after a nice fast ride down the highway, that my hair in the back is tangled like a bird's nest. And that kind of tangle also happens in our inner world. There's so many cross connections that happen, and we start responding and reacting to certain situations that trigger a conditioned response. And so I'd like to first define what a conditioned response might be. What example can I come up with in the moment about Ben gave a great one, Pavlov's dog. That's a good one. Ring the bell and the dog salivates, and that's all great because you can wash your floor with it or something if you're at a soap cleaner. And on perhaps a more realistic note, I've noticed that people, and myself included, have conditioning around certain ways in which I expect others to act and respond around certain rituals or events. Having raised children, I have said to them, I can hear myself, that I've said to them in the past so many times, don't talk to me in that tone of voice, because I'm conditioned to hear my children address me in a specific way. And as a result of that, when they don't respond favorably according to what I suspect and expect and assume and intend them to do, I get my knickers all in a twist. And generally, that's very uncomfortable for everyone involved. Now, what I've also noticed is that when we do this in a community or in a group of people, then what can happen is a gang-like mentality can unfold. Someone makes a large social blunder. As an example, I attended a beautiful wedding this weekend, and it was my friend's first marriage, and her beautiful, beautiful groom. It was his second round. And the best man stood there in this beautiful, shining, velvety black tuxedo, and it took place in a conservatory, and so it was in a glass room, like being in a fishbowl, really. It was just a big glass house. And as he toasted the bride and groom, and he, with his face shining, he was so proud and so happy to be there, and clearly his love for the groom was very deep and very long, and they'd been through quite a bit together. He raised his glass and he boldly addressed the room, and he toasted the bride and the groom, wishing them the best, a happily ever after together. And he said, to you, Stephen and Susie, which are not their real names, I'm protecting the innocents here. But guess what? Her name isn't Susie. Her name is Tammy. Although the groom's ex-wife's name was Susie, the entire room went silent. It was as though time stood still in a moment that was horrifying and shocking and surprising all at the same time. Well, I was unaware. I mean, I knew that he was previously married, but I had no idea about the stats and specs of his ex-wife. It was irrelevant to me. What I know is my friend and him are beautiful together. They love each other. And she's helping to co-raise the two beautiful children that he has from this previous union. And the best man said out loud that he wished that he could drop to the floor. Or actually, I think what he said is that he wished he had some kind of tool so that he could cut a hole right there through the glass or in the middle of the air and walk through it and disappear. And his head hung. And okay, all right, so, oh well. You know, stuff happens, right? We all make social blunders, as a friend of mine spoke to today.
And funnily enough, they make entire tapes of these so-called bloopers, and people at the end get to laugh about them because they actually, in another circumstance, can be rather funny. But again, it matters very much which perspective we adopt. And I believe that for many of us, there is one automatic response that will come up, and it's not necessarily always a choice of how we choose to see that perspective, even though it can be. It certainly can become a choice when we allow ourselves to expand our perspective and start to look at things from many different viewpoints. And with the adoption of new viewpoints, we actually discover that there isn't necessarily always only one meaning for each one particular circumstance, but rather that we can start to adopt many different viewpoints depending on what actually suits us the most.
I agree. And the question is whether or not we're paying attention. And as always, I find that to be the key. Because in this room, at this beautiful wedding, with so much love and the clear love of this man who misspoke a simple word, I watched the crowd turn into wild, crucifying hyenas. And I was at a table with, I think there was 12 or 10 of us at each table. It was an intimate wedding. There were 60 guests. It was beautiful. And two women, one beside me and the other one at the other end across from her, they were outside enjoying a cigarette or whatever they were doing when this blunder, this faux pas happened. And so they came in quite innocent, sat down and bellied up to the beautiful sticky toffee chocolate puddingy dessert that we had. And immediately the woman who sat across from me was just wildly explaining to them what had happened. And then they all, oh my God, not again. I can't believe he did that again. And I had to wonder what the big deal was. I mean, okay, I get it. Oops. It wasn't very pleasant. The beautiful bride hung her head for a moment. The groom's eyes bulged out of his head. The room was silent. It was uncomfortable. But if it wasn't so labeled as wrong or unacceptable or judged as it never should have happened, how could that happen? How could he say such a thing? Well, how could he not? The way the brain works is really simple. And Ben, I was wondering if maybe you would explain a little bit about the physiology of the brain and how the conditioned pathways happen.
Sure. We all have many different neurons in our brains. And neurons are essentially sort of like the towering stations that allow us to make connections between different ideas. And as we're having more and more of these different ideas, there are little arms called dendrites that are coming out of these neurons. And as we start to create a new idea, and especially when we make connections between different ideas, these different neurons start to fire. For example, you might have been told at some point that an apple is a piece of fruit. So essentially, you see an apple and you're being told this is an apple, and then you get to see a piece of fruit, or you're told that you are seeing a piece of fruit. Thus, you start to associate the word fruit with apple. And as you continue to do this, both neurons, the one for fruit and the one for apple, keep firing. And as they fire together, they also start to form their arms out together and start to make connections with one another. And as they're making connections, they are essentially starting to create that idea that fruit and apple go together. So all of a sudden, as over your lifetime, you make that association so deeply, there is a pathway that is actually built. So at some point, then when you hear the word apple, it is hard to not associate it with being a fruit. For example, you haven't made the association that an apple is a vegetable. That's why also when you hear the word apple, the word vegetable seems to be much further away. So essentially, it's just that when we start to associate different ideas, there is actually a physiological path that is being created. And it's sort of like walking through a field. When you're wanting to go from point A to point B, the first time you walk through this field, there might be a lot of resistance because the grasses are rather tall. So the first time there's a lot of resistance, it takes a little more effort to make that association from point A to point B. But as you keep going through that field over and over and over, there is a little path that starts to form between point A and point B. And it starts to just automatically draw you down that path because, well, now everywhere else there is resistance. It doesn't come as naturally to go from point A to point B through another path simply because you're not as used to walking that path, and all other paths but the one that you're used to have more resistance with them because there are still taller grasses. And the same is actually true for our brains as well. As we're not as frequently associating two different concepts with each other, we're also not having the effect of having these ideas come up. As we're just thinking of one, the other one will show automatically.
And, you know, conditioning also really can show itself to us, whether it's a serving conditioning or not, by the way we deal with change and the way we deal with things that come into our lives unsuspectedly, surprisingly, if you will. Sickness is a really good one. Death is a good one. Around our pets, suffering is a good one. You know, there's a way in which many of us are very conditioned to connecting with those that we love in our life, whether that's a person or a pet or a plant or a garden or a home. There are certain things that are fundamental to our associations with our own happiness. And when changes unfold that are surprising with those things, it can cause great resistance. And that resistance, I feel, can be quite strong and cause grief or anger or depression or any kind of suffering because it's not in alignment with the conditioning that we're used to around that relationship or around our relationship to that relationship or person or thing. So if we have a pet that suddenly gets sick or changes or has to lose an arm or something unfolds with it where we have to start giving it needles or medication, it questions and brings up against us, right? And it feels like it's against us. It is complementary when we open into it because we all adjust. But initially, it feels like it's an affront. It is. It is an affront to our conditioning because I'm used to being able to take my dog for a walk this way or have my cat be able to go into the box or be able to go outside, and now it can't. And it really is fertilizer for us, as it almost forces us to start noticing things in a different and new way.
Essentially, we get used to the world being one way, and that becomes the most easy way of going about the world because we've grown so accustomed to it. But voila, the world always seems to change. Just as we're getting so comfortable on that couch, we've sat in our spot on this one particular couch and we really found our groove. We got that groove. It's become so comfortable. And guess what? All of a sudden, we feel the spring underneath. And this spot that's been so comfortable, now all of a sudden is starting to poke us in the rear end. All of a sudden, we need to find another new way of readjusting, and we might try putting a new pillow on it, but that new pillow doesn't have our groove in it yet. So just as we got used to our groove with these new circumstances, they've become comfortable and not so new anymore, we have to resit in this pillow and get our groove with this new pillow. And the issue oftentimes is that when these things are so fresh, they do bring about resistance. It does even sometimes hurt. And because, well, it's sort of like scraping your feet along the floor frequently. And if you've got carpet, at some point, you will get rug burn. At first, it just hurts. Until you build a callus, for example.
Or you build up the electrical charge, and every time you touch something, there's a shock.
And then when we keep working with it and we keep playing with it, all of a sudden we find other ways, like, for example, picking up our feet. We're not getting the same kind of rug burn, but it does take a little practice in the muscles to, even however subtle it might be, to keep adjusting to this new way of living. And only after a while, it does usually take an adjustment period, but after the adjustment period comes about, there is always, always, always a place where we can actually find a new plateau that allows us to actually cherish what happened and where we don't have to suffer from or be victim to the outer circumstances anymore, but we actually get enriched if we're willing to open our eyes. And usually, some of these things seep in automatically, but it oftentimes does very much help to start gaining an understanding of how to adjust the viewpoints more spontaneously and with more fluidity, because at some point we can get to a way of being in the world that these things happen and we don't even have to experience so much resistance anymore, because the thing we have gotten most used to is that the world always changes. When we get to that place, we can be faced with a lot of different things and we might still grieve for someone that has passed. But we're also maybe, we have arrived at that point where we don't necessarily have to suffer. We can grieve without having this deep sense of suffering. It's more like a demagnetizing that just allows us to go with the flow, allows us to swim with those changes, let them come, but let them pass, because we also understand that no matter what comes our way, we can always find a new way of growing and a new way of being that is just beyond anything that we had before. And it allows us to supersede any and all circumstances and only get away with it in a better way, that we actually end up having gained something and gotten that golden nugget that allows us to just not be so challenged with that same circumstance the next time it comes around.
That was beautifully spoken, Benjamin. And it really does boil down to me over and over again. I seem to always come to the same place, which is, how well developed is my personal observer? How tuned in am I to my body? How willing am I to listen to the messages that come? Because I tell you, being in that room of people who were crucifying this man, who, by the way, magically did disappear, I don't know how he just vibrationally shifted planes, or he really did leave the building, or was somewhere and just I couldn't see him anymore because his vibration dropped so low into humiliation and shame. Because I tried to find him and I couldn't. I wanted to soothe him. I wanted to let him know that it's okay, that I get it. But I tell you, watching this, the room of people, and I also want to say it wasn't everybody, but there was quite a few high-end drama responders. Their belief systems and their meanings and definitions of what is appropriate at a wedding and what is not appropriate at a wedding was very specific and very underlined and bold in their world. And they made sure that everyone else in the room knew that. And when I watched them, I just knew, being so practiced at watching myself, that they weren't comfortable. Oh, yes. I mean, they were very mightily and dynamically involved in what they were talking about and in slandering and belittling this beautiful, heartbroken man. Absolutely. They were good at it. They were practiced at it. They were on their high horse and they weren't coming off. They were charging full force forward. And if they could gather other writers in their army of crucifixion, they were hell-bent on that. But if they had taken a moment to stop and take a breath and check into their bodies, they might have noticed that it really didn't feel good, that there was such resistance to what had happened, that there was such separation that they had created between themselves and the mistake that this man made through perhaps, if nothing else, but a regularly practice neurosynaptic network connection in the physiology of his brain, because he had practiced for a long time the connection of his buddy with the old relationship. And even though there was a new relationship, it didn't negate the old one. And in a manner, in a way that I found to be quite beautiful, I loved that the ex-wife was present. The two beautiful children they have together were a magnificent part of the ceremony. They are a cherished part of the family. And to raise a toast, and instead of saying no, 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 oh yes, go ahead, Ben, I'm sorry.
We have a caller on one line one.
Beautiful, welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, yes, this is David.
Good evening, David. How are you this lovely day?
Just fine. And
wonderful.
Just curious, what show am I calling into, please?
The Spring of Life show.
Okay, all right. I'm listening to the wrong show, then.
I would beg to differ and say you're right in the right place at the right time. If you've called in, what would you like to say?
Well,
or ask or offer?
Well, I don't know what the subject is, and I'm kind of at a loss at the moment. So why don't I drop off? I'll get back and reload and tune in and see what you're talking about. Then I can come in intelligently.
Actually, I believe you might have asked a question on the chat, because we gladly will talk about anything and everything. We are definitely welcoming any questions that you may have whatsoever. There was one question here whether we have any experience with object activation and more specifically how long to run on each object. Now,
That would be
is that something you're interested in, David?
yes, I am.
Okay.
I am interested.
Beautiful. And when you use the words, I like to make sure that I'm in tune with people's dictionary because every one of our meanings and definitions are a little bit different. So, David, when you say object activation, what most specifically do you mean by that?
Basically, getting rid of darkness and activating with light.
In an inanimate object, a person, a situation, in what?
An inanimate object.
Okay, like a stone or a teapot or my latte machine when it's not working properly, something like that.
Yes, in fact, I believe it could be most anything that I think an environment stores the energy of things that occur around that environment and so forth. In other words, a wall could even store vibration, so to speak.
Okay, absolutely. So there, I actually love what you just said, David, because my experience of that is that the only energy anything can really store is in accordance with the belief that I have around it. So are you believing that an object in your environment or in your realm is storing some what we would call perhaps low vibration or negative energies?
Yes, and I understand what you say, that our beliefs would affect the storage, so to speak, of that object.
Naturally, our beliefs already hold their own energy and frequency as well. So we are actually affecting our environments at all times. It's actually impossible for us not to affect them. Because this is even simple quantum physics. As soon as we observe an object, we're already affecting it. We're becoming part of its reality, and it is becoming part of our reality. And now, the thing is, it is, for example, actually quite simple to start adjusting the energy of an object simply by believing you can do that, number one, and number two, by wanting to do it. Most often, I believe it's done through intention to just intend to bring light into an object, for example, will start to make it light up. Same actually
Yes.
as is done with water and prayer. If you look at Masaru Emoto's work, for example, he's now taken very specific photographs of water molecules as they're freezing before a monk or someone has spoken words to the water and afterwards. Now, the length of how long you want to do this really also in part depends on your belief system. Essentially, we are constantly shifting dimensions from moment to moment to moment. Actually, you could even say billions of times every moment. So essentially, you can shift the light beingness of an object in an instant if you believe that you can. Some people feel that they need to practice it a little more in order to get that good at it, but it's not necessarily required. You can essentially, by attuning yourself to any particular vibration, start to shift to a place in your world where that object is just ha automatically had that change that you are desiring.
Is that helping you, David?
Yes, it is.
May I ask if you're willing to share what the object is and how what you're feeling around it is?
Well, I'm just talking in generalities. I have several things. Actually, I have some vehicles that I want to sell, and I want to clear their vibration, so to speak, to make them more attractive.
Beautiful. So that I've done that with real estate actually, and it's been very effective. So I get that. My question would be, as it was to myself, is to start asking yourself how you feel. Are you really, really willing to sell those vehicles? Do you have, I ask myself, am I willing to sell that house? Do I feel completely complete with the house? Am I still holding on to some memory or some expectation, assumption, or insistence on the way in which the sale of the house must unfold? How do I want to feel in the house? How do I want to feel when it's sold? Have I said goodbye to the house? Have I cleansed myself of any loose ends or any entanglements that I might have had? You know, if I raised my children there and I have that the wall of their height and their growth marked off, am I still mourning that? Is there a way in which I can salve that and have ceremony or a ritual or a letter I can write? And all of these things, there is no one way, I found, David. But what there is each person's individual permission slip that they resonate with. So for you, David, you know, you might want to say, hey, I totally release any conditions on these cars. I really want to have an abundant quick sale to people who are going to enjoy and honor the vehicle just like I did. Do I have any feelings around it that the vehicle was a pain in my rear end? You know, did I put in lots of work and expect top dollar from it? A lot of people are like that with their houses. They put price tags on their memories. But recognize people aren't buying the memories. And I'm not saying that that's the case for your car. But that's certainly one way in which I move through things. And I like Palo Santo. So I use it to cleanse and to smell things up. But not because I really believe it does anything so much, other than it makes me feel really good. I know that in and of itself has no magical properties. I recognize that everything in my world is a neutral prop until I empower it. I liven it with meanings I give it, with powers I give it. And so if you have something like that in your life that feels good, and the caveat with this would be, David, that you feel good about the incense you're using or the crystal you're using or the amplification tool or the divining tool. Not from a place of, oh, I have to do this right, or if I don't, something's going to go wrong, because that's fear. That's running away from rather than towards. So it's really about, I love this, and so I'm going to sprinkle cinnamon sugar all over the car and fairy dust and do a moon dance, because it makes me feel joyous and happy. And once I have my vibration, a joyous, happy, wondrous place, it's then that I can see the car is moved out of my driveway and I got all this cash in my hand and I'm feeling fine. So how does that feel for you, David?
Okay, I think I get what you're saying. I would summarize it somewhat as saying joyous intention is more important and of primary importance than the actual method.
Absolutely, absolutely. How do you feel about the sales process itself? Are you excited about it? Do you feel good about the car finding a new owner? Or do you find it's a little difficult, challenging? How do you feel about that?
Well, actually, I visualize the, so to speak, perfect owner coming forth for the car and being very happy at getting it, that it'll be perfect for their intent and use.
And do you feel the same way about it? Do you feel it's mutual, that you're actually getting the same joy out of it that the owner is getting out of it?
Yes, well, my joy would be seeing it go to a good home where it would be appreciated.
Lovely, lovely. And do you feel that this process would be something easy? Do you have any expectations on how the process itself works, or any particular feelings, any particular way that you intuitively sense that it would go? Because I'm just curious, because you said, or we're talking earlier about, I believe it was clearing or instilling the object, activating it. Is there anything that could hold you back from selling this car just perfectly the way you see it most fit for all of creation and yourself?
Well, I was referring at that time to, I guess you'd say, any less than desirable vibrations that might be stored in and about the object, and just clearing those so that it's clean, so to speak.
Okay, okay. Is there anything particular that is coming to your mind about that?
The only thing is the previous owner of the car. That I've just become aware that there might be, I guess you'd say, some vibes stored from that owner that I would like to clear.
What kind of vibes?
Let's just say the owner was a little bit less than a stellar person. I don't want to be too judgmental, but I would just like it to not have any association with them.
So you now own the car, yes?
Yes, and have for 3 years.
Oh, okay. So I would be asking myself, I'd say self of myself, I have owned this rockin' piece of equipment that has served me well. Has the car served you well, David?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so beautiful. So I've owned this rockin' piece of equipment for 3 years, and it has served me well, and I love it, and it loves me. And now it's time for us to part ways, because it's time for me to have a new experience, and also time for this beautiful car vehicle to move on and have a new experience with somebody else. What does the previous owner have to do with it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree. There is... the time that has gone by, but I was just concerned because I hadn't paid attention to what might have been stored from that previous ownership.
And did you have any issues with the car when you weren't paying attention to it?
Not particularly. You know, it's had to have some maintenance, but nothing major or, you know, that would cause me to be disgusted with it or anything.
Beautiful. So then I would be asking myself now, I didn't have any issues with it when I wasn't thinking about it, but now suddenly, as it's time for me to let go of this car, I feel a change. Why am I now suddenly pulling that out of my bag of tricks when I haven't thought about it in 3 years? And I've had a wonderful time with this car. I've just done maintenance, which is pretty standard. I mean, you know, hey, let's get real. Oil filters need to be changed. The occasional set of spark plugs have to go in. Why is it right now, when I'm at the apex of change, does this idea present itself? What am I concerned about? What am I afraid of? What's really going on here?
Right. Okay.
That's the question.
I guess, you know, I really feel like I want to maximize the experience of the subsequent owner to myself so that they have the maximum joyful experience with the car.
Now, generally, in the universe, the way it works, it's never one-sided. Usually things always work both ways. There is a give and a take. And I believe that if, for example, you felt wonderful about this car the entire way through, then essentially the flow can just continue onwards. And there doesn't necessarily have to be any resistance that has to come about, unless you feel there is a particular thing that is still sticking out like a sore thumb. But then there's also a question about whether it doesn't necessarily have to be anything about the car. But it could also just be something that, with a slight adjustment in perspective, might actually give you that optimal experience that you've been looking for, that you're definitely wanting to find out more about how to get it, but haven't quite been certain on how to make that flow easily.
David, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Are you open?
Yes, yeah.
What's the worst that would happen if you sold your car to somebody? What's the worst scenario that you have going on around the new owners of this car?
That they would be unhappy with the vehicle.
Okay, so let's play this out, because this is a really, really great way to discover what's floating our boat sometimes. Okay, so they're unhappy. So imagine now, let's play. You've sold this car that you've had a fabulous time with for 3 years, and the people are unhappy. And they actually phone you a month down the road and they say, David, I am so unhappy with the purchase of this car, I can't even believe that I bought it. Then what?
Okay. I couldn't do anything about it at that time because I would be selling it as is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've sold it as is. So then, perhaps the response is, well, gee, Bill and Susie, I'm really, that's kind of a drag. I'm sorry to hear that you're so unhappy with that car, but there's really nothing I can do about it. You did buy it as is. It is a new to you used vehicle, yes?
Yes.
Okay. So then what?
Okay. Well, the original intent, what I'm wanting to do is clear the car of any possible existing negative vibe, so to speak, that might be present so that it would be a good experience for the subsequent owner.
My question, I understand, and I think that your heart's in the right place, but really, from a really key place here, is it has
exactly the perfect vibes it needs to have for the next owner, because the universe doesn't necessarily always deliver us with what we would believe would be in our best interest at any given moment, but the universe actually delivers us what we need in any given moment. So let's just assume for a moment that the next owners actually, from a higher level perspective, are desperately seeking to find a way to get beyond their own judgment, to get beyond their own discomforts with the material objects around them. Now, you sell them this wonderful car that served you for such a long time, and they get this car, and they buy it, but then they discover something about it that they didn't see beforehand. Now, they start to get a little bit upset about it, and maybe just as they're starting to roll this ball, they're actually starting to see something else and something else and something else and something else. So all of a sudden, they are noticing an avalanche of their own self-perceived judgment about this car come at them. And maybe what's happening to them is not even so much that this car is really providing them any issues, but it's more that they are being confronted with their own viewpoints about the world, about how they see their world. This might actually be exactly their soul's calling. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're just going to be happily jumping up and down, but they might actually, through that, get so upset that they actually end up seeking someone out in order to learn about their own judgment of the material objects in their world. Getting a nice little lesson that without this car and without getting upset about these little aspects, they might have never gotten. Sometimes what's valuable to someone on their path is really difficult to find beforehand. But I have never for myself found anything that could really be of adverse effect to me if I am willing to open myself to all the different aspects and perspectives that allow me to actually see the gold nuggets and no matter what happens, because the things and objects around me never determine my actual happiness. It is much more about the viewpoints and the power that I have within me of how I create myself and my own beingness and my beliefs, specifically also about the world around me, that brings about the effect, whether it's positive or negative. So again, the car will only be a neutral prop, and only a person that actually needs it will actually buy it. And they will have exactly the perfect experience with that car that will serve them on their path. But it's often very difficult to understand and know what will be most suitable to them. It might actually look contrary to what we expect it would be best for them.
I love that. And you know what else I'm hearing, David?
If I'm understanding correctly, what I'm attempting to do is project an experience on the subsequent owner that is really not my business to project.
Well done, David. Well spoken.
I think I see what you're talking about, and thank you.
Well done. Good job, David. Good job. And you know what? The one question that came to me was, do you feel that it's your job to somehow make sure that these people who buy your car are happy? Is that something that you normally carry, that you feel a responsibility for others' success or happiness or feelings? You try and take that on through, you know, all sorts of different ways, worrying about it, trying to change things, make sure everything's just perfect. There could be something in that for you too, because the best thing we can ever do...
I think that might be true sometimes, particularly in what we just described, what I was trying to do. And it actually is something that my spouse has mentioned to me, that I have no business being responsible for other people's happiness.
Yeah. Oh, David, how beautiful. And thank you for being so transparent and so open with that and so raw, because I so get that. I have been, you know, sometimes elegantly dancing through that one in my world, and at other times struggling like a drowning skunk in my own stench as I try and untangle myself from the conditioning that it's all my job. And that for me started very early in life. And so I want to make sure people are okay. I have tended in the past to be a worry wart. If I make a call and the person doesn't connect with me, I immediately go off in stories about something's going on in my head and I have to help them. I feel responsible for people in the past for them, they're getting things or healing or my kids' safety, even though they're adults, or my lover's happiness or the cat's health. And it's exhausting. And the best thing that we can ever do, which you're doing, and it's so insightful and so inspiring, is that you notice it. And in that, perhaps in the next time that thought comes, David, you can just, you know, take a page from the Jasmine book and take a breath and plant your feet and just go, that's not my job. My job is to feel good for myself. And you know what? I feel really good about selling this car. I enjoyed this car. I love this car. I'm going to clean this car, and I'm going to say to this car, you go get her done and go to whoever you need to go to, because, hey, I feel good about that. And sometimes it's a little shaky, and sometimes, you know, it's a little scary, but it's also really exciting, because the more we do that, the more deposits we have in that experiential, spiritual, emotional bank account. And then it gets easier. And then it gets easier.
Yeah. Well, this has been a very, very nice call. And I thank both of you for your insight and walking me through this process.
Oh, thank you very much, David. What a pleasure and an honor, and warm hugs to you. Thank you for calling. And I'm sure happy you tuned to the wrong station. How fabulous.
That is lovely.
There are no mistakes.
Yes. Isn't it funny how things can oftentimes turn out a completely different way than we imagined they would? And somehow, when we're just looking for that place of feeling a certain way, and we stick with that feeling, we often get exactly what we needed, even though it didn't look like what we previously imagined.
We got what we needed, but it wasn't what we were seeking. Exactly.
I love that.
Wonderful. Yes, and the thing is that We can't really ensure that anyone will be happy with anything in particular. The one of the most powerful insights that I have had for myself was actually that we are all the creators of our own worlds, and the best that we can do to support anyone else is to let them have their experience. We can offer them a helping hand, but it is up to them to actually take the helping hand and giving them the freedom to go through whatever they need to go through is actually one of the most powerful and freeing experiences, not only for myself, but also for the other person. And at that point, we step into real true power, because we then not only allow them to create their world the way they need to, but we can actually become completely independent and start to create our world the way we want to. And from that place, from feeling good about what we want to do ourselves, only more good things will come your way. So all the best to you on your journey. Have a blast.
And enjoy spending that money from your sale of your car.
Woohoo!
Yeah. Well, thanks again to both.
Thank you for calling in.
Thank you, David. Namaste. Ciao.
Bye-bye.
That was so beautiful. So beautiful and so wonderful. And you know, Ben, I want to say you're really, really good at that. You really are good. And, you know, not only to all those out there in the world, Ben is not only my co-host on the show, he's also my life partner and one of the greatest coaches and the most beautiful hearts I've ever encountered. And I feel so blessed and so gifted that I get to wake up every morning on the days that I, you know, well, I'm still waking up, so it's all good, right? beside this beautiful man, because he's brilliant. And the one thing he does for me, because I'm quite an intense woman and I feel things very deeply and I'm very passionate. And, you know, I mean, in certain realms, that's really fabulous, right? In other realms, it can be fabulously scary. You know, and I get that. And he is really, really good. And I'm learning through being in relationship with him. He's really good at holding his own, standing on his own two shoes, in his feet, and letting me be how I am, because I feel things very deeply. And, you know, I can really have some deep releases that look and seem pretty intense. And I let it happen. I let it all unfold. I let the emotions come. I let the words come. I'm good at not projecting them at Ben. It's not what I'm talking about. But I am very good at sharing what's going on, and I really let it move through. And if that means I'm on the couch for 2 days and, you know, just weeping and walking around in the same pajamas, that's okay. Ben's really good at letting me be how I am. And I appreciate that, Benjamin. I love that you'll just say, honey, is there anything I can do to assist? And sometimes I'll say yes, and sometimes I'll say no. And at other times I'll say, Ben, I want to talk to you about something, or can you help me? And he'll say, not right now, I'm busy, but you're doing a fine job. And I love that, because that's one of the things, as David spoke to, about responsibility that I feel is a theme of my life, that I feel I'm here to unravel so that I can let someone be disappointed or grieving or upset or angry around me and not feel like I need to fix them, because I know that's the last thing I want. And Ben, you're brilliant at that. And if I haven't thanked you most recently, please, from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much. You're wonderful.
Well, those are very deep and warm words, and thank you so much. It's a great honor having them come from you. It is lovely to live with you, be with you, and to experience the world with you, because there is certainly never a dull moment. I have learned so much from you myself, and I love all the different things that you pick up on and the nuances that you catch where I just don't see those things. And I think actually that where our power comes from is from working together, from that wonderful dance that we do together. And I find that you very much enrich my life that way as well. And it is lovely that we can move forward holding hands, walking beside each other, and just continue to grow and expand. It's certainly been quite a joyride, and it only keeps getting better and better. It's been a lovely ride, and I'm sure we have lots of more crazy joyrides in front of us.
Yeehaw! Damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. Unravel the torpedoes. I'd like to thank everybody who's listened to our show here and Studio One, BBS Radio, Spring of Life show. And it's been wonderful. David, thank you so much for your participation. You're bold and beautiful and wonderful, wonderful spirit. Ben, thank you. And to our engineer and our good friend and station owner, Doug, blessings and warm hugs and much love to you and your doggy. And we can all just hold Doug and his family just in a little cradle of love and see it just surrounded with angels.
And thank you so much for hosting the show. It is always lovely to be on the air with you. What a pleasure. What a blast. And everyone, if you would like to visit us, you can either call in next week on Monday or come to http://springoflifecenter.com. Thanks so much for listening in. It was lovely having you. And I'm sure we will get to hear our vibrations again.
Thank you so much. And remember, apply the conditioner of your own awareness and untangle your heart and your thoughts. Thank you.